tonight on the Steve and Dan podcast. Steve and Dan discuss episode 511 of The Walking Dead, The Distance. Hi, I'm Steve.
And I'm Dan, and welcome to episode 14 of the Steve and Dan podcast, in which we discuss The Walking Dead, season 5, episode 11, titled The Distance.
The Distance.
The Distance.
Distance. That means far away.
How far are you willing to go, Rick?
Okay, so they're going the distance tonight.
Yeah.
Well, they did go the distance tonight, and by tonight I mean 2 weeks ago. When we watched this episode the first time around. So this is the second in our catch-up episodes. Mm-hmm. We're going to make up some distance here. Apologies if my voice sounds particularly bad in the episode 13 of the Steve and Dan show, because apparently I was recording through my laptop microphone, which is a piece of shit.
Quick recap. In the end of the last episode, we were in a barn.
And we'd met Aaron. We'd met Aaron in the sunrise. Beautiful sunrise, Aaron.
In a lovely pressed check shirt, suspiciously clean shaven. So, they bring Aaron into the barn, and pretty much the first thing he says is...
I want you to audition.
Audition! Yeah, and that's a word that I had forgotten that he'd uttered. Because mm-hmm. Tonight we're recording not only 5.11, but 5.12 as well. Mm-hmm. And the word audition is now something that's significant to me. But anyway...
He says, my job is to convince you all to follow me back home.
As pretty much every single outsider they meet has said to them, I have a sweet deal somewhere. Wouldn't you like to come and hang out?
And by sweet, I mean somebody's liver. Oh, sorry, this guy's not Gareth. This is not Gareth.
No, but he's very Gareth-esque.
Oh, yeah, he's charismatic, he's clean-cut.
Clean-cut, all-American, white guy.
Charismatic in a bureaucratic kind of way. Like, not as charismatic as, say, Rick, or even a governor, for that matter.
Yeah.
But I love Rick's reaction. This episode should have been subtitled... Rick the asshole. Yeah. Actually, Rick has been hurt.
This was the only option available to the showrunners, though, in my opinion, because I mean, we can't stomach them sitting there and quietly indulging someone.
No.
Like, it's gone bad so many times. I mean, I almost expected them just to kill him outright.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just, I think that the only reason he doesn't is because Michonne won't let him. Michonne's basically saying, we need this.
Yeah.
She says, actually, we need to find out what this is. We can handle ourselves, she says. She reminds Rick, we've dealt with all the other shit that we've had to deal with. We can deal with whatever these people are going to throw at us too. So let us find out what it is.
Yeah.
Because if it is real, we need it. We need it.
Yeah, and the last episode was a lot of desperation, and the group is sort of fed up of being outside.
They're not fed up with Rick, though. You know, interestingly enough, oftentimes when you look at groups that are turning on themselves, they turn on the leader first, right?
Yeah.
But nobody's turned on Rick.
Not really.
They questioned him a little bit here, but they don't turn on him.
Glenn has been moderating Rick for the last probably 6 or so episodes. Like,
don't call him the moral compass, though, because that'll get him killed.
No. I mean, Daryl's happy to go along with whatever Rick decides to do, but...
Usually, although he questions him here tonight too, doesn't he?
He does, a little bit, yeah. Well, he also questioned him during the whole assault on the hospital.
Yes, he went with Tyrese.
He took Tyrese's side. So there has been not... Well, I guess, yeah, dissent.
I just want to point out here that Tyrese is fucking dead now, Daryl. Was following him a good idea? I don't think so.
No, even Tyrese knew that was bullshit.
Yeah, absolutely. Tyrese thought, you know, maybe it would work out.
But anyway.
This episode is an excellent episode. I mean, I think it's a step up from last week.
What this episode has that last episode did not have was some big decisions to make and some new characters.
And some real sense of movement.
Yeah. So, you're right. We get a lot of dynamism in this episode. So, we have Aaron. He's in the barn. He's sitting there and he's giving the usual play. You know, oh, I've got this lovely place. Why don't you come and hang out?
Look at the pictures.
I don't expect you to believe me, but it really is very nice.
Look at the flowers.
Here are some pictures that look, let's be honest, like pictures of Chernobyl. They're just like hazy, underexposed images.
We're not talking about like Stalker Chernobyl, which is pretty cool.
Oh, Tarkovsky style.
Oh, have you played Stalker, by the way?
Played it. I thought you were talking about the movie.
Oh, no, dude. Okay, this is quick shout out to one of my favorite first-person shooters of the last 5 years. It's called Stalker.
Hmm.
And it's Shadow of Chernobyl, and you play a guy trying to scavenge in the Chernobyl radiation zone. And it's just great. It's a Russian game. It's great. Going back to what we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
we've got movement. We got a shout out to Dale tonight. We've got Rick being paranoid and a bit of an asshole. We've got Michonne kind of being almost oblivious to the dangers.
We've got the only man in Christendom who hates applesauce.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's not... We got Judith crying at a person, which is awesome. Uh-huh. She hasn't done that since Father Gabriel.
And starting to crawl.
And you also have our very first male homosexual couple, which is wonderful.
That's because, true. You
know, yeah, we do. We've had
we should have known, really, when Aaron turned up clean-shaven. The first clean-shaven character we've seen.
Hey, dude, you know, don't stereotype. There are all sorts of gay men, okay?
There was a lot of foreshadowing, though, right? we should probably step back a little bit. Okay. So this is the scenario. We're in the barn. Aaron is trying to convince the group that they should come back with him. Rick punches him. I'm not really sure why Rick punches him. I think it's just in a fit of pique.
It's lovely. Well, Rick excuses... He excuses himself by saying that I want to have him tied up before I talk to him.
Is it because he... It seemed to me it's because he finds the flare gun. It's like he was almost ready to believe this guy. Then when he found the flare gun...
You've obviously got somebody else nearby because if there's a flare gun, you know...
It's a sign. It's like, come get these douchebags. Yeah. So he knocks him out for no discernible reason. And then there's a little bit of a standoff with the rest of the group. Michonne is very keen to pursue whatever this person has to offer. So they pretty much decide they will do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Aaron has a long monologue about how he's impressed with the survivors. And he's like, oh, I've seen how good you guys are. We really need tough
people.
That's
right. He says that to Rick. But what does Rick say? He says, just because we're good people doesn't mean we won't kill you. If the five of them aren't back in an hour, I'm going to put a knife in the base of your skull, he says. I mean, like, he's very graphic about how he's going to kill them. This is when the five of them go off. There's Maggie, Michonne, Glenn, Abraham, and Rosita all head off to go see if it's true what he said about this RV and stuff they got, right?
And it's certainly true what Rick says about the knife in the base of the skull, because he's got form. Yeah. This is the red machete all over again.
Yes.
Yeah. So
He doesn't make... empty promises.
So Aaron says that he has come with one other person and they've got two vehicles and it got stuck when the storm came down, which we saw last night.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm just trying to save you guys. So Rick agrees to let, I think it's Abraham, Rosita, does Glenn go?
Michonne and Maggie and Glenn.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Glenn has this awesome moment where they're walking along the road. If you see anything, shoot it. This is so un-Glenn. He basically says, like, you know, if you see anybody moving, shoot it. And Maggie and Michonne both kind of look at him, like, seriously? So if it's the guy's friend and he's coming out to say hi, we just shoot him? And he makes a really good point, actually, doesn't he? He talks about how... I think Michonne says, what if they're just like us? Mm. And Glenn says, if they're just like us, we should be scared.
Yeah, because this is definitely shoot them.
Yeah. Really good observation. He's definitely not been navel-gazing over the last four seasons.
Mm-mm, mm-mm.
He knows what they're really about.
So he leaves Aaron and Rick and Judith back in the barn. And Rick can't get Judith to settle. She's being very difficult.
She apparently doesn't like the look of Aaron.
She hasn't eaten in a day and a half.
That could be it, too.
So
Aaron says, hey, I got some food, man.
He's got some applesauce in the bag. That was kind of weak. Did you get the explanation for why he has applesauce in the bag?
Because he wanted to show them that they have apple trees. Bring a fucking apple. I'm sorry, but, you know, like, I'm looking at the weather. It's definitely spring. Well, okay, maybe that's a bit early for apples. It's early for apples.
He's bought his Polaroids that he's applesauce.
It's early for apples, man. Hey, man, I didn't want to just show you we have apples, but we have canning facilities, too. It's great.
And then in a foreshadowing of the gay thing, and I thought this was kind of clumsy, really, but Rick's like, all right, I don't want to feed my daughter this applesauce because it might be poisoned.
So you're going to try it first.
But so he says, here, eat it. And Aaron's
I can't. My mom used to make me eat apples to make me manly.
To make me more manly, yeah.
Because apples are the manliest food I can think of.
And what child does not want to eat applesauce?
This is a weird moment.
I thought it was a little bit bad scriptwriting, really.
No, oh, I agree.
Because why have the manly thing in there right before you reveal that he's gay, you know?
The writing for this episode was by Seth Hoffman.
Mm.
As a writer, he's written The Distance. He's written Crossed, which is a good episode.
Yeah.
Self-Help. Don't remember that one as much. He wrote Us, which was a good episode.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote Claimed, which was an excellent episode.
That was a good one.
And Too Far Gone, which was... So he's written a lot of good episodes.
He's got some chops.
Yeah, definitely. He's also worked on Vegas, House,
This was a pretty good episode.
Yeah, it was.
But having a character who is revealed as the first gay male character in the show, as having mummy issues that manifested in the form of being forced to eat foods to make him more manly, it just seems a little bit clumsy to me.
Yeah, it was a bit stereotyping.
Sorry,
Seth. I'm sure you'd do a wonderful job. You're an excellent writer, but that was a bit heavy-handed.
A little bit, I think.
Yeah. So he has a problem with the applesauce, but he does take a bite.
He eats it in the end.
You know, there's this image where Rick's forcing something into his mouth again, which is...
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't really read into that.
Well, it's almost...
It wasn't lollipop-esque. It wasn't Gorman.
It was not sexualized, but
no.
But it becomes sexualized a little bit later, especially when he talks about the mommy issues. And then we see later that he is gay, and there's this idea that Rick's kind of forcing himself on him, or at least his desire to find out if it's poison or not, on him against his will. It's not very kind.
That's a good point.
Rick is not a nice guy.
When there is the I don't even want to say reveal, but when Aaron is reunited with his lover.
Yeah, when his boyfriend, is it Eric?
Yes, definitely Eric.
Yeah, Eric. And there's this lovely scene. There's a really wonderful, loving cuddle, head forehead to forehead. They love each other. He was worried about Eric.
It's a pretty cheesy love scene, in my opinion.
It's cheesy. I agree. It's almost like the writers were like, okay, so we're gonna have a couple of gay characters in this episode, and we really got to show that we're not afraid.
Yeah.
To show gay characters.
So this kiss has to be big.
Big kiss. But, you know, the actual important thing about that scene was that Rick's watching it, and he's a fucking cold bastard.
Yeah.
Because he watches it, and, you know, most people would see that and go, okay, these guys are human. They have love. They have compassion. Maybe what they're talking about is real. But Rick comes in and is like, nah, I'm not going to let you sleep with him.
Mm. Yeah, but however, there is this really tender scene. But then the first person who comes in is Rick. You know, he kind of leers around the corner, and the guy's like, hi, I'm Eric. And then he's like, Rick.
did he look jealous? He might have been jealous.
There's a similarity in the names as well. Eric is very close to Rick.
Eric.
You know what I'm saying?
Eric.
Yeah.
I'm He's not like sure the Viking, really... Viking version of Rick. That's what it is.
I don't think they're really messing around with Rick there, but...
So in a nutshell, we should get back to what we're... Okay, so Aaron, punch, knocked out,
yeah,
tied up, comes up, he talks to him.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the group of five that goes out, they find the RV.
It all checks out. There's an RV and a car.
They find those, like, SpaghettiO knockoffs. Mm-hmm. Were they again? There's a couple cool moments that happen. Basically, they find the stuff. They decide, okay, maybe he's legit. They're going to start going. They decide to go. And this is really Michonne's call, right? Michonne is the one that basically says, we're going.
Rick wants to go.
And so they decide to go. I got Abraham talks about the food, what happened to them. He actually apologizes at this point. He says, he turns to Rosita. This is a really weird moment. He says, you didn't think I was going to hurt you, did you?
Mm.
And Rosita's response was, no, it's not you. Which is interesting because she sure looked scared in the moment when he had just beaten the crap out of Eugene and was like ready to kill anybody near him.
This is one of the byproducts of the problem of having so many characters, is that there's a lot of tension that was set up between some of these characters, but we really don't have time to go into it now.
No, and what happens is that you end up getting character building in 30-second snippets.
Yeah, you get it a couple of times with Noah. In fact, it's kind of wasted.
Who's he again? What's Noah? Is there a guy named Noah? I have no idea who you're talking about.
There you go. Like once in this episode and once in the next episode, he remarks on the death of his father in a kind of sad way.
The one good thing has been that there's been a lot less Carl.
Yeah.
And nothing against Carl, but hey, there's a lot less Carl.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing Carl's done lately wasn't even Carl. It was actually Bad Lip Reading, and they did Carl Papa, which is an incredible video. You have to look it up.
Carl Papa.
I'll link to it in the. I'll link to it when I put up the blog post.
All right, bookmarked.
Yeah, it's really good. Mm. So
Carl has a really good line though in 512, which we'll talk about next.
Yeah, he actually 512 is a good episode for him.
It is, but he says, and it's relevant now. He says, you don't like me, do you?
Oh, I'm going to have fun with Enid later.
That's a watershed moment.
Yeah, totally.
All right. So basically, long story short, Aaron convinces the guys to come to this place.
They're going north, so they head north, right?
So they climb into the RV and the car, and they head north.
There's a really cool moment. Michonne's been all like, let's go, let's go, let's go. And all of a sudden, she gets this weird look on her face. It's now nighttime. They're driving north. And she gets this weird look on her face, and she says, did you ask him the questions?
Yeah, she's like, let's get this. So the scene is this. It's night. Like, it's pretty, it's dark. They're in the car. It's Glenn,
she's looking
Michonne
at the pictures.
And
she's
Aaron.
Looking at the pictures, right?
Yeah. And then Michonne's
like, why aren't there any people? in these pictures.
It's like a moment in a horror movie just before something awful happens.
Holy shit, there's nobody living.
Yeah, a character gets the realization.
It might be a show about zombies if there's nobody living.
Mm.
Sorry.
Yeah, so she says, did you ask him the questions? And she's like, how many walks have you killed? And he gives
can't count.
He gives the answer that everyone gives, really, apart from Father Gabriel.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, I don't know, lots. Why do you ask? And she says,
how many people have you killed?
And he says, two.
Yeah.
Now,
and why? They tried to kill me.
I don't know if that number's significant. I don't know even if this character's significant, but maybe it will be. But then he gives a reason. He's like, well, they were trying to kill me. That's a safe answer.
Okay, I'm just going to have... this is going to be a brief comic moment. If you don't want to hear anything about the comics, including you, Dan, tune out for about 15 seconds.
All right.
So not to give anything away about what happens, but in much the same way that Tyrese became a very popular character with comic book readers, Aaron also becomes a very popular character. So there is some definite weight to what he's saying. To what he's talking about. I'm not going to give anything else beyond that, though.
Steve was, for those of you who weren't listening, Steve was talking about Aaron's weight.
I've lost 13 pounds in the last 5 weeks, my friend.
Yeah.
And that's not just Aaron. That's Steve. I've actually lost 13 pounds. I'm doing really... That has nothing to do with any of the... Okay, never mind. help me.
Steve has cancer.
I'm dying. I only have 45 more years to live.
We should get our excuse for our 45. Next absence from the podcast in right now. Yeah, Steve died.
Yeah, well, that's all right. But I came back. Just like The Walking Dead.
All right. Okay. So they're driving the car. Michonne's asking all these questions, and it's kind of a red herring. It seems like it's leading up to some tense moment. But then what really happens is Glenn's driving through the middle of the night in the dark, and he starts hitting walkers, and they're running
to
Glenn's
a herd. Like it's a total fuck everything moment for Glenn. It's really kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
And so he starts, they're in a caddy right off the bat, which, you know, if you're familiar with a nice kind of, you know, 1980s era American Cadillacs, they're a big fucking car. You know, we're talking like 30 foot long almost. Well, probably a 22 foot long vehicle, and probably 4,500 pounds of weight. Probably a nice big V8 engine, maybe a 454 under the hood. That's a Buick, but a big engine, a lot of weight.
Yeah, he's plowing through walkers.
He plows through the point where there's so much gore on the window he can't even see anything but shadows.
And we get a nice vertical aerial shot, which sort of reminded me of the original Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah,
I don't know if you played it, like on the Amiga or the old systems.
Yeah, dude, I actually I've got every one of the Grand Theft Autos because I'm a complete sociopath. Mm. I love those games.
That top down plowing into people, we get that scene, which is kind of nice. So yeah, Glenn, like, so almost inexplicably, just mows through them for a good like half a click,
and they lose the RV quite quickly because there's no way the RV. They're actually seen back in the RV. They choose not to drive through the morass.
So he hammers through them all, and then the obvious thing happens. They realize they have to go back and find their comrades. But
well, basically they break down. Almost,
yeah, the
right?
car won't start.
There's a really cool scene with Michonne at the front of the car pulling arms out of the radiator.
That was so stupid. Like, since when? Since when, like, in the history of humanity, has pulling body parts out of a grill encouraged a car to restart?
Well, there was a time that I ran into this flock of birds.
It reminded me of the scene with the fire engine. Remember that?
Oh, God, yeah.
They're like, the only reason it won't start is that there are some guts.
The best part of that scene, though, was the water hose totally, like, disintegrating the zombies. That was a sweet, sweet scene. So you got all these walkers approaching. Mm-hmm. And Michonne's trying to get the stuff out of the grill, and they can't get it out fast enough. And then what do they see in the distance?
A flare.
There's a water tower, and a flare goes up beside the tower.
Mm.
And Aaron's like, fuck this, I'm out of here. Mm. I'm done. It's almost like there's this attitude about Aaron at this moment that says, I have been simply catering to your weird things, and now I have no more fucking time for you.
Mm. So is that how you read it?
That's exactly how I read it. It's like, you know what, I'm gone. I'm done.
In that
you
moment, I read it good. Slightly differently.
Okay.
I read it as, my act has been perfect so far.
Uh-huh.
Like, I've got you just where I want you. And then, oh, shit. Like, this signal means that we're no longer following through with this plan.
This is probably due to the fact that I've read the comics and you haven't. You know, because I kind of had an idea who I thought Aaron was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I got to, again, just point out, they change everything between the comics and the show. Everything's changed. Except for Rick. Rick is kind of the one status quo. He is Rick in the show. He's Rick in the comics.
There's one big difference, though.
Well, he has a hand.
Yes.
He has both hands. That's right. In the comic, he lost a hand.
I feel that was a good choice.
Yeah. It would be really annoying.
It would be very annoying, wouldn't it, by now?
Why am I wearing this green shit on my hand? Oh, yeah, that's right. I've lost it. Okay. So, yeah, we've got the flare. Aaron kicks the door open and takes off, bound. He's handcuffed behind his hands, right? Or he's bound. And he's taken off into this pile of walkers.
It's pretty inconsistent, really.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird moment. But
he's very fearful later on.
But what it did was actually, it was an opportunity then for Glenn, I think, to show his heroism a little bit. Because Glenn kind of follows him, or at least ends up in the same spot as him, and saves his life. And then he unties him, gives him a gun. So Glenn is showing a lot more trust than Rick.
Yeah, it's his only choice. Comes back, mows down a few walkers that are threatening Rick and Michonne at that point. And then they're like, Aaron throws the gun down. He says, okay, if you want to tie me up, that's fine, but do it rather quickly, please.
And so Rick's like, oh, fuck it. They head off to where the flare was. They find the RV in an alleyway. Turns out everybody's holed up inside this little warehouse.
And that's when we meet Eric.
And Eric, who has broken his ankle, which is why he shot off the flare.
It's an old volleyball accident.
Apparently, the people in the RV followed the flare and saved his life.
Yeah.
And so he feels kind of betokened to them.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to supposed to believe, right? Is that Aaron now likes them because they've saved Eric, and so there's sort of a bond between them.
And as much as you felt this was rather contrived, I did think that the moment between Aaron and Eric seemed like two guys that... Like, he was really worried because he saw the flare go off, and that means there's something going on. And it's like the sense of, like, I thought you were dead. Thank God you're not. You know, I love you. And I thought it was quite good. I know that it was maybe a little bit...
It was a wild one,
but it was okay.
The pudding was overrated a little bit.
It wasn't quite the...
No, bullshit. Yeah. I'm calling it, right?
Okay.
Like, the bit before with the manly thing, okay, you can kind of let that go. But I think that's a little bit fucking stereotyping, okay? But then when the guy's there, they kiss each other. That, you know, fine, people kiss each other. But then the guy's gay, and he's lying there, and his first concern is talking about the looks of the car. You know what I mean? It seems to me that, like, they could have had gay characters... and just had them be fucking gay. Like, why do they have to be concerned about looks? Why do they have to be clean-shaven? Like, why do they have to fulfill all of these things?
You know, at least they didn't have, like, Eric looking at him going, oh my God, you got, like, blood on your shirt.
Yeah.
It's going to take me for fucking ever to get that out. I mean, seriously?
Come on, people. Right? All right, they're gay.
Well, they're definitely playing the stereotypes.
They're gay, that's fine. They don't have to be the gayest characters that have ever appeared in a TV show, all right? You don't have to be like, okay, see, we've got some gays.
Look at us.
You know what I mean?
Look at us. Look,
they're gays. We're not homophobic. They're in the show.
They handled Tara way better because they had her with her gay lover. Her gay lover gets shot. And then the fact that she's gay, except for that one kind of flirty scene with Rosita back in season 4, has not really come up again. And it's fine. And, you know, we all know she's gay. That's fine.
That's fine.
But it's not the focus of her character.
Yeah.
The focus of her character is that she's a fucking idiot. And I love her for that.
Yeah, that's it. Because, like, Tara's character's been handled really sensitively, right? She's not been played as, like, a masculine woman. I mean, like, quite often when there's a lesbian character in a show, she's given masculine qualities. Yeah, Tara
scratching
isn't.
Scratching her balls and, you know.
Yeah, Tara is just a person, you know? Like, Tara's character is awesome. But I felt that this exchange now was, like, it was just projecting gay so much that it revealed an insecurity on behalf of the screenwriter.
I think that what I suspect is that they were so excited about having their first male gay characters that they just didn't know how to handle it.
It's an exciting moment for everyone.
We did get bare ass last week.
Yeah,
we're gonna talk about that later when we're talking about episode 5:12.
Mm-hmm.
We had bare ass. First time since...
Second
time. We had the dolphin smooth buttocks of Abraham Lincoln. No, not Abraham Lincoln. What the fuck is his name? Abraham Ford.
That's your weird hybrid of your two male crushes in the show.
Abraham Lincoln, zombie slayer. That's right.
No, I'm thinking Abraham and Andrew Lincoln. That's you're bringing together.
That might be what I'm doing, yeah. That or the, you know, president who, you know, the Emancipation Declaration. That could be what I'm thinking about. Anyhow,
after this big reunion, they all sleep in the same
Rick
bed.
Is a prick. Rick is a prick. He says, I don't want you guys sleeping together. And it's not because... Okay, I got in Rick's defense, he's not a homophobe.
No.
He simply is afraid that they're going to
do
something.
He's absolutely right. Like,
don't make any plans.
You should keep them both separate. He's completely correct. Yeah. Glenn's a little bit more compassionate.
Aaron's basically like, you're going to have to shoot me to keep me away from Eric. And Glenn's like, let him go. It's okay. There is a really cool conversation between Rick and Michonne, which we haven't talked about, which is when she's talking about trust, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we should trust these people. We should try this out. No, not trust them outright, but simply trust that there might be a possibility that something's good here. And he says to her, you know, you've had a couple of situations where things appeared to be good on the surface. And he says, when you arrived at Woodbury, what did you hear?
Nothing.
When you arrived at Terminus, what did you hear?
Same.
Yeah. He's saying, like, when we arrive at Alexandria, he's really worried that they're not going to hear anything there too.
Uh-huh.
And it sets up a wonderful scene later. This is actually, for me, the best moment of the episode.
When they arrive at the
gates? Second best moment of the episode. They arrive at the gate, so what does he hear? He hears children.
Oh, playing. Right, when they hit the sound of the thing.
And there's this wonderful shot, and this is like just a fantastic moment. This would be probably a combination of, okay, Seth Hoffman kind of recuperating himself from that kind of heavy-handed moment with Eric and Aaron. But it's also Larissa Kondracki, who is the director of the episode. She gets the camera in really tight on Rick's eyes. And Rick's eyes are full of tension, full of concern. And then you hear the sound of children, and his eyes relax. You can see his eyes relax. And this is a huge shout-out to Andrew Lincoln for that, for great acting in this moment. Because, like, he's not the best actor in the world. He never has been. But he's getting better as mm-hmm. the show goes on. And this moment, he shows, like, 4 years of tension or 3 years of tension suddenly kind of releasing. Because mm-hmm. he hears children playing, right? He knows that this is not Woodbury. This is not Terminus. If there's children playing, unless they got, like, speakers to try and fool you, there's a possibility this might actually be a good place.
Fair enough. I think the last shot of this episode is him reaching into the car and picking up Judith, who is...
Yeah, and it's from Judith's eye view, like it's down by her face,
yeah.
looking up at him. And there's this kind of light in the background, almost like a halo over his head.
It looks like hope, doesn't it?
Yeah, but then Carol comes along and has the best line in the episode. So the second best part was the eyes. For me, the best part was Carol coming up to him, carrying her big semi-automatic rifle. And what does she say to him? You may have been wrong, but you were right. Yeah, absolutely. He was right. Like, what she's meaning here, and this is absolutely true.
You've got to be a dick about things.
You've got to be aware that everywhere we've ever been, it's been a bunch of assholes that want to kill us or eat us.
Mm.
So you're doing the right thing. You're protecting us. So Carol's on his side. She's got his back, no matter what happens.
Yeah, Carol's more important than anyone.
I love Carol. Carol's
the most astute character now.
Yeah, absolutely.
She proves so that in 512.
Well, we thought Daryl was, but 512 kind of shows that Carol's actually got a little bit over on him.
Daryl's not strategic. Daryl's just instinctive.
There is one other thing we should mention before we finish up our talk for tonight's episode, or 2 weeks ago's episode, is that before they head into the town, there's a couple things that happen. The RV breaks down. And Abraham says, you know, we need a new battery. Where the fuck are we going to find a battery? And Glenn says, come with me. Mm-hmm. Opens up this space that's kind of like a hidden compartment under the door into the RV. And this is a real shout out to Dale.
Yeah.
Our good friend Dale from season 1 and 2. Because he had the RV and he taught Glenn how to fix it. So they don't mention Dale's name, but it's definitely like Glenn gets this little smile on his face. I know what to do. And I know what to do because Dale taught me what to do. And then there's also another moment where before they get to town, Rick says, there's one thing I have to do. And he heads over to this kind of abandoned house nearby, and he hides a gun.
Inside a Vitamix blender.
That's right, Vitamix. They get to the town.
That's the same thing you did outside Terminus, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that saved their asses.
Yeah.
Because they were able to grab those guns and keep alive because they had the hunters after them after that. So, yeah, that's a setup into episode 12. It was a good episode, 5-11. I thought it was better than 5-10. I thought there was a lot of movement.
Mm-hmm.
I did like that. I really enjoyed Rick being the asshole, countered by Michonne being the voice of reason, which was kind of opposite to how it's mm-hmm. been in the past. Michonne's been kind of a volatile character in the past.
It also had a really nice shot. A zombie gets shot in the eye with a flare gun.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Yeah, he just goes down, his face illuminated. It reminded me of the end of Gremlins.
Shout out to Greg Nicotero again for his amazing special effects work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, Gremlins. You make me think of Phoebe Cates when you say that.
Oh man. Don't. We'll never get this episode finished.
Phoebe Cates. Okay. So, shout out to Phoebe Cates as well. Love you. Love you.
Yeah, big thanks to Phoebe Cates. I'm
going to visit your purse store in New York one day. Hopefully, Kevin's there as well, because I love Kevin Klein. Yeah, so I enjoyed the episode. I think we're setting up for some big stuff coming down the road, mm-hmm. and we're going to find out about Alexandria next week.
Mm-hmm.
Or in our timeline... In about five fucking minutes. All right. Well, Dan, it was a pleasure as always. You have a good night, mate.
Yeah, you too, mate.
And I'll see you in 5 minutes.
See you in 5 minutes.
Bye. Bye-bye.